Hello, I'm Shalom.
And I'm Courtney, and this is Almost Nerdy. We love sci-fi, we love fantasy, we love all things nerdy.
And we are about to spoil this movie for you, so make sure you've already watched it. Hey guys, welcome to Almost Nerdy Crisis Part 3. I know we did an intro episode, mm-hmm. and then we did another one movie.
Yeah.
So this is Part 3. But this is the second movie.
Yes. We are doing V for Vendetta.
V for Vendetta.
Shalom is like too excited for this episode.
I'm so excited because I went through the book.
Well, that not inspired, V for Vendetta.
Yes, that inspired V for Vendetta. And I loved it. I hated it.
Shalom listened to 1984 in, I think, 24 hours. He listened to the whole book.
Yep.
And just, like, went through it. Hated the ending. This one...
I hated the ending.
V for Vendetta has a much more satisfying ending than 1984.
Yeah. I hate these movies that are, like horror movies, right? Where, you know, the horror... Like, the movie ends with the villain winning... I hate those. Like, I'm like, you're trying to be too deep for your own good.
I kind of like those sometimes.
I just want to feel like the, like, happy, you know, happily ever after. That's what I want. But this one ends, like, and they draw it out. It's not just, like, that he loses, but they really draw...
The book.
Yeah, they draw the loss out. Like, yeah. They spend time on it.
Yeah.
And I think, for me, that was very disturbing.
It's pretty rough. So, in case you haven't watched V for Vendetta in a while, basically the premise is that the world has gone to crap. So, England has isolated itself, essentially. Mm. And they're now, I think it's considered fascist, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's fascist
mm-hmm.
Nation. And there's this character, V. We don't see his face because he always wears a Guy Fawkes mask.
Mm-hmm.
And he is going to blow up... Not Parliament. Where is he going to blow up? Because Guy Fawkes wanted to blow up Parliament. He wanted to blow up a building, a significant building, to, like, free the people, basically.
Oh, as a statement.
As a statement, right. Yes. Uh-huh. So that the people will rise up against the government and see that they are basically controlling the people.
Right.
So we go through this whole thing. Evie Hammond is our heroine, and mm-hmm. she goes through all these ups and downs of knowing him, and, mm-hmm. and she is eventually freed of the fascism as well, and, like, mm-hmm. that almost brainwashing of the government.
Right.
So at the very end... She has the choice. Hopefully you've watched this movie if you're listening, because our intro does say that we will ruin this. Also, you've had like 10 years to watch this movie. So, moving on. 15 years maybe? It's been a long time.
It's been a long time.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So, Evie does decide to push the button, and she blows up the building.
Mm-hmm.
And the inspector's right there, and he just lets it happen too.
Yeah. But so, he knows the truth now. He's knows woke. The truth.
Yeah. So, they get woke, hit the button, blow up the building, mm-hmm. and... Yeah, that's pretty much V for Vendetta.
Yeah, it's a good movie. I love that movie and can't wait to discuss it.
After this break.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I jumped it.
Yeah.
So we chose V for Vendetta because there is literally a pandemic in this movie. And we literally have a pandemic right now. They're different. They're very different because in the movie, it is chemical warfare. And I do want to say, like, we're not being paranoid. We're not plandemic people. Like, I feel like I just need to lay that out right now.
We just need to say we don't believe in any of that nonsense.
Yeah, we don't believe in that. We don't. Yeah. But there are definitely parallels going on between this movie and, like, reality of right now.
Yeah.
And... One of the things, like, one of the reasons we picked it is just the, like, the idea of how do you kind of, like, respond to something like that. And in this movie, they responded by creating their own society.
Right.
And actually, the government used fear. right. in order to do this.
Right.
So they created their own disease,
right.
used it on their own people so that they could use an election mm-hmm. to then have a miracle cure.
Right.
And provide hope for people.
Right.
And I just think that's so relevant right now because, again, I don't want to get too, like, political here. Or, like, I know we're getting really close to an election. But yeah. I do think it's really important to look at what politicians are promising. And that mm-hmm. is something that Trump is promising. He mm-hmm. is sitting there promising a cure. And mm-hmm. to be honest, when you listen to the CDC,
The October surprise.
The October surprise. So when you're listening to the CDC, you're listening to these scientists, like, yes, they are close to a vaccine mm-hmm. for right. COVID. But at the end of the day, we don't know if it's going to work yet. They even say, like, the first round of vaccines are usually somewhere between 50 to 60% effective. Mm-hmm. Just going on what we know from previous vaccines that have mm-hmm. been made, which is why they usually take about 2 to 3 years to mm-hmm. produce one. Mm-hmm. And I know that there's already one manufacturer that's starting to make vaccines already, and it does not have FDA approval.
Right.
And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Like, why are you producing that?
And I mean, the one in India stopped because they were having issues.
They did stop? Okay.
Yeah, good. The one in Ooh. India stopped because they were actually seeing some issues with the vaccine. And, like, we're not even surprised by any of that, to be honest with you. It's political, very political. I mean, Russia was like, yo, people, we have a vaccine. And Putin had his daughter injected. Ooh. What world are we living in? I'm like, what world are we living in right now? We're living in movies. This is like legit movies.
It is.
Movies.
It's like a movie.
And it's like you begin to see some of... Okay, let me rephrase this. These movies are feel prophetic to me, even mm-hmm. though I don't believe they are prophetic. Like, this guy saw visions of the future. I don't think so. But I think that this guy had an understanding... You know, George Orwell, he had an understanding of human nature mm-hmm. and understanding of how people behave. And I think he framed it. He created this world, right, based on the world that we're living in. And he created extremes of it. And it just happens that we are moving in that direction mm-hmm. of those extremes. Because he talks about the leader, Big Brother, in the book. He says, Big Brother is watching over you. Mm-hmm. Like, and basically, Big Brother is this radical personality that they love with all their hearts. Mm-hmm. And in the movie, you know, they have, you know, the Chancellor. Mm-hmm. And he's basically this radical, forceful personality, conservative, mm-hmm. you know, again, it's not, we had this conversation. I don't think every movement that's crazy is conservative. I think that conservatives are very open to more radical stuff, like, because I think there's a lot of, like, Christian, like, faith and religion mm. and because it's heavy religion, not just religion, but there's this sense of being right that mm. that conservatives have, that a leader like that, like Trump, right, can show up and say, yo, you're under attack, but we'll defeat people, we'll give you power, we'll give you this, and it's so easy to radicalize conservatives. It's so easy to do it, and we're seeing that today. This book, just when I was looking at that situation, I was like, holy cow, like, this is actually, like, such a depiction of the Republican Party right now. And I don't know, like, I was having goosebumps. That's why I could not stop until the end is terrible, but the end actually speaks certain truths about even, like, where they openly defy the truth, right? They say they hate the truth. Mm-hmm. So one of the debates that they were having. So this guy is, like, being tortured.
This is still in the book.
In the book, and he's getting tortured. And
hopefully, everybody has read 1984 because we didn't say spoiler alert for 1984, Shalom.
true. But it's good. It's good. Even if you know what happens, it's good. I'm sparing you the ending. But okay.
And then back to View for Vendetta.
Right.
Okay.
I will say this. Like, so basically, he says, I can decide. So this is the leader of the party, right? He says, I can decide that gravity doesn't exist. It's up to me. It's up to the party. The party decides what is gravity. The party decides what is oxygen. We can decide there's no oxygen. We can decide that there's no gravity. We can decide, and that will become so. And then the guy who's being tortured, he goes like, well, then fly. And the guy said, I won't, because I don't want to. And it's this deep way of deception that they learned, where it's like, if you can just disregard the truth, you can actually have power of narrative, right? Mm-hmm. And you're seeing that a lot right now, right? And you see that a lot in the movie. So in the movie, they basically were just like, yo, it was a demolition project, right?
Oh, yeah. Even they just straight up lie.
Right.
And then, they lie about V dying.
Exactly. And they lie about that. And with the demolition project, when they were having the board meeting, and they were like, any witnesses have been detained? And I was like, flip. Like, I was like, oh, holy cow. Like, they're killing people, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Enon, who even accidentally witnessed something, and because they want to control what is true. And I think that is something that fascists and dictators, that's what they do. They seek to redefine what is true.
Mm-hmm.
They're obsessed with power to the point that truth is a threat to their power.
Mm-hmm.
And so they seek to destroy truth. And so that is why they can lie, like, in a minute, right? Today I learned of a term called, I think it's called Gish Gallop. And basically it's the debating, you know, technique of just saying a whole bunch of lies. Like, you just lie. Like, in one sentence, you lie 10 times to the point that someone cannot keep up with you and cannot push back. Mm-hmm. And that's just something that I'm seeing so much in this movie, where, like, these people who are, like, in the pubs, in the homes, they are so, so drowned in lies, right, that it's so easy for the government to just cover up stuff. And be like, if something bad happens, they can literally just be like, that was a, you know, project, like, or something. Mm-hmm. And that's, you see that a lot in the book. And I think that in the movie, they represent that pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think what I was kind of, and this goes off of what you were saying as well as what I was trying to get at before, was just like the idea of using hope, almost like weaponizing hope in order to create your narrative, like what you're saying, creating that narrative. So in the movie, we see that they created this narrative where the disease was there, but they already knew that they had the cure, right? So they use this narrative of fear to be like, hey, if you give us these freedoms, then we are now going to keep you safe. And we're going to keep you safe by, we're going to get rid of all these people, anyone who's different, like, we're going to get rid of them, anything, anyone who's going to have dissenting views, like, we're going to get rid of them.
Right.
And they do. Right. They kill all these people.
Right.
And experiment on them, actually, just for being different. Right. In the name of difference. So, and I think that, like, that's kind of like what you were saying, where you were like, they're just making vaccines, even without, like, FDA approval and all of that. Mm-hmm. It's like, fear does that to people.
Right. Right.
Fear will push people to do things like try a vaccine that hasn't been tried and true yet. Like, it hasn't been worked through. You know, that's why people were drinking bleach back in March. Like, they were scared. And it's like,
it's sad.
Yeah, it's really sad. It's like when you're scared, like, you want to preserve yourself. So it's like, you get scared and you're like, I need to do something. So I actually really love the speech that V gives, where he's like, I understand why you gave up your freedom. Mm-hmm. Like, you were terrified.
Right.
But, like, you also need to know the truth, because you've just been, like, fed all of these lies, like, your entire life now. Like, so much so that you don't even remember what life used to be, because they've erased everything. They've erased art. They've erased other religions. They've, erased anything. Like, people are hiding them true selves, even. I always forget his name. Evie's friend, who she stays with in the he's like the talk show host.
Right.
Like, he's gay. And he has to hide it. And in order to hide that, he has women come over. Just to keep up appearances.
Right, exactly.
So I do think that that's something that's very relevant to today.
Right.
Just like the use of that use of fear. I think even right now with people being worried that like the election will be tampered with in the US.
Right.
You know, they've put together a lot of precautions, but there's also like these seeds being sown that like our election's going to be tampered with. And I think like that's way of like that's just way of like destabilizing the government essentially to get your way.
Right.
You know.
Right. I think that that's just something that, you know, Trump has managed to do effectively. And it's very clear, to be honest, like you have to call it what it is. He's a liar. He's a liar. And at the same time, there was a time when, like, you know, in 2016, you know.
That's a long time ago.
Where if a politician was caught in a lie, even the politician was like, I had a peach, and then we're like, liar, you had a mango. Oh my God, scandal. For the next month, it's like, your career scandal. Is over. Done. But now it's like, I have never seen someone assault the truth that much. Even in Zimbabwe. You know, I grew up under a dictator, and yeah. I've never seen anything like that in my entire life. I mean, Mugabe would skew the truth, you know, and twist it and kind of turn, like, he, even though he had the power to just be like, screw you guys, I'm going to just rule, right? He kind of, like, did not like to be caught in a lie.
Yeah.
You know, he did not like to be caught in a lie. He would distance himself from stuff. He would, you knew he was the guy who was doing all these bad things, but he was kind of smart, right? Very smart about the way he communicated stuff. And but with Trump, it's like, you catch him every day. Every day he's caught with something. And he just viciously turns around and attacks that, like, truth. Even the concept of truth, he attacks it and molds it to the point that, you know, his followers can't even see left, right. They have no compass anymore. They have zero compass. So a lot of them will kind of be dazed when something happens, and then eventually they get their marching orders, like, here are the defense points, and then they come out and they're like, well, here are our points, and then they just like yell them at people. And that is something that we're seeing today. And you see that in the movie, they don't show enough of that. They do show images of the chancellor, you know, just being like, wow, you know, Adam Sutler.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, ah, you know, and you have these huge crowds that are there and everything. Yeah. So I would like to imagine that that's kind of what is happening. It's kind of like, hey, this guy, he showed up and he presented, and part of a fascist thing is they present themselves as the only solution. They use language like, only I can fix this, only I can solve this, only I can bring about change. And so eventually people get like, even sometimes people who are well-meaning, people who are kind of like open-minded and kind of like, I just want to hear what he has to say. Like, he has a way of just grabbing, having hooks. A fascist has a way of just like hooking you in, because he presents quick, solid, firm, aggressive solutions that eventually in the long run you will turn around, and then, like, just like you hear about the German soldiers who had to get walked through, you know, Auschwitz, they'd walk through the camps and see what they had done outside the war, and seeing their humanity return, and seeing the guilt and just the pain of, you know, like, it's like the Skeksis, what the Skeksis are afraid of, you know, like having that guilt, that feeling come back, and then having your eyes open to the horrors that you were part of. But a lot of times it's because, like, a fascist just has that ability to skew the truth. And without people, like, radically saying, like, no, it's a lie, like, and that's why I love the media, who just say the truth and say, hey, here are the facts, here's the reality. Without that, without even our generation, that is very like skeptical, very debative, like very like we don't believe anything until we have proof. Mm-hmm. If no proof, we're not believing it. Mm-hmm. And I think there are bright days ahead. Mm-hmm. But just like in the movie, I think we're kind of in that phase where the truth is under attack. Except in the movie, the truth had disappeared. There was nothing.
Yeah.
You know, people were kind of living normal lives.
Yeah.
You know, that was the new normal, rations, yeah, all that stuff.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I really like what you had to say about the media, because that was something that was so striking to me.
Right.
In this show was when Evie was like, she's lying. I can tell that she's lying because she's blinking a lot. Like, she always blinks a lot when she knows that a story is false.
Right.
And I was kind of like, who was the interview that we were listening to where the reporter was talking to someone about Trump's tax returns?
Ooh.
And they kept, and I think it was this PR person.
Mm. He was a White House aide who was having an interview with someone from NBC or CNN, I can't remember. And she let him have it. Because he was trying to attack the media
and say like that they were presenting false news. And she was like, excuse you, they actually have spent months on this article.
Right.
Doing all of this investigation.
Right.
Like, how dare you basically deface them?
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
And I think when you watch movies like V for Vendetta in a situation like this, where it's like the media literally has nothing.
Mm-hmm.
They have nothing behind them. They're literally fed the stories that they're allowed to tell.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was, I was really, at first when I was listening to the thing, I was kind of like, oh, come on, don't be a jerk to that guy. But then it's like, when you actually think about the severity of repression of the press and like freedom of speech and all of that, like, I think that's really, it's so important to talk about. Like, it's really important to talk about.
Yeah.
And I think I wanted to bring up the idea of censorship, because I think that this movie really dives into this idea of censorship. And I think it's really relevant to today, because we do have social media with all of these platforms and people putting out so much information all the time.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think what I want to talk about with censorship is just this idea of like, what is good censorship and what is bad censorship? Like, I do believe that there is a point that something is good censorship.
Right.
Like, for example, Germany has a lot of things that are censored now. Mm-hmm. Anything that they consider hate speech, censored.
Right.
And, you know, in the U.S., we're like one of those things. We're one of those people where it's like it gets up to the Supreme Court and they're like, I can't define pornography, but I can tell. But if I saw it, then I would know what it is. Mm. And it's kind of one of those things
Is that the case right now?
That's literally happened. That was a Supreme Court case. And that's really what they said. Yeah. Wow. Because they were like, well, what about this art with this naked person? Like, how is this pornography? And that's not pornography. So it's like censorship is one of those things where it really is a very fine line of like what is what. So I think I just wanted to talk about freedom of speech because I know like that's also a topic that's being thrown around a lot, where you'll see people will post something on Facebook.
Yes.
For example.
Yes.
And they'll be like, I've posted this 3 times and it keeps getting taken down. Like, they're trying to suppress my voice.
Yes. TikTok is getting a lot of flack for that right now. Yeah. I think that hate speech should always be stopped. Mm-hmm. Any form of hate speech should be stopped. And there are things that we've agreed on as society that these are hate speech, right? White people saying the N-word, that's hate speech. Can't say it.
Just out already.
Yeah, it's out. You know, it's out. Or calling black people monkeys or anything derogatory, that's out. It's out. And also just bullying, like saying something about someone, attacking them, that's out. That's completely out. I think with things like Twitter, right?
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I think there's something that has to be said about public figures, right? If you're a public figure like Trump, right? You can't go on TikTok and say stupid things because of your power and position, people will trust you and respond to you. Mm-hmm. It's like a doctor, right? If a doctor goes on Twitter says all these wrong informations about hygiene, right?
Yeah.
Says all the wrong things. That doctor should be held accountable mm-hmm. by virtue, if they use even the saying like, I'm a doctor, listen, I'm a doctor, I'm telling you this. And if that information is wrong and harmful, that doctor should be held accountable for what they said mm-hmm. by virtue of the responsibility they carry in their lives. And it's the same thing with Trump, for example. He can't go on Twitter and say hydrochloroquine is the solution. Mm-hmm. You can't say that because you are in a position of power that allows that actually people can actually see what you're saying and act upon it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is just something that is very dangerous, it's reckless, and that needs to be censored. So I think the side of just you can't say that I am just stating my beliefs, mm-hmm. right? If what you're saying is derogatory to a certain group of people, like the way, you know, like Muslims have been treated,
mm-hmm.
the way Latinas have been treated, mm-hmm. some of the language that they've used, I just think that those are things that like that need to be censored. If you say things that are derogatory of a certain race, and I think that Twitter can do a better job of censoring. They can do, and Facebook and all those can do a better job. And then there's the side of when a person in power, right? A person in power, like any form of criticism that comes against them, then they want to shut it down.
Yeah.
I don't think there's ever a good case, a good reason for them to do that. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Unless if so, that person has secret information about where the guy lives or something. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But you are not allowed to, like, if you're a public figure, you should be open to criticism. People should mm-hmm. be able to criticize what you say. You can't shut people up. So there's the social side. In my mind, there's a social side of censorship, which is, in our conversations, we agree what's hate, we agree, like,
mm-hmm.
about public figures, how, like, they, public figures, need to be censored if they're saying things that are irresponsible, that are not true.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as a public figure, if you say something that is against science, you need to be shut down immediately.
Yeah.
I don't care, like, how much you complain. I don't care. You're a public figure. You have responsibilities. And unless if you have proof, actual scientific proof of what you're saying, people, scientists can prove you wrong. If science is against you, like, you need to be shut down, right?
Mm-hmm.
Anyone who shares that information needs to be shut down if it's not true, if it can cause harm, which it has.
Yeah.
And so there's that side. And then there's the side of, as a person in power, like, you yourself cannot say, hey, like, I'm going to shut TikTok down because they made me look dumb, you know, at my rally, right? You can't say that because you are a person in power.
So yeah.
Unless if those people, if guys on TikTok are, like, if they're actually, like, doing something that is harmful, right?
Mm-hmm.
That is harmful to individuals, or sharing information that is harmful or hateful, hate speech or bullying or something like that, then unless that's the case, you have no right. You have no rights there. You just have to live with it. Like, that's part of life. You decided to be a politician, and that's what you're going to experience.
Mm.
So those are my two.
Yeah.
Like,
with great power thoughts. Comes great responsibility.
And great, you know,
I think
criticism.
This is kind of how I think about the internet. It's very interesting because I feel like the internet is almost, like, unbelievable in some ways because
yeah.
someone is not an influencer unless they have, you know, 50,000 people following them or
right.
something like that, mm. right? So I just want to, like, put this into people perspective for a second. Mm. If you yourself, right, mm. are sitting there and you are giving a speech
mm-hmm.
and there are 50 people in that room.
Mm-hmm.
You're just, like, some person just giving a speech. Like, that's still a decent amount of people who are coming to see you every day.
That 50 are gonna people. Go off and tell other people.
Yes. Well, I'm just saying, like, sometimes I think about our podcast. I think, like, we have like an average of 20 listeners or something like that. And I'm like, wow, that's like a college, that's like a small college like course. Like there are 20 people who come listen to us every day. Like that's kind of exciting to think about. Like there's 20 people who want to hear what we have to say every week. And I'm like, wow, thanks guys. Yeah. But it's also like the internet has blown these numbers out of proportion where it's like people are like, oh, you only have 20 people on average who listen to your podcast. Like that's nothing. But I'm like, but that's something. That's like that's 20 actually 20 people who consistently listen to our podcast. So I do think that like the internet and these numbers and these analytics and everything have like just been so blown out of proportion. And I feel like the internet has just basically essentially been the Wild West where there are no rules. There's no social engagement to like what you can and cannot do on the internet. And it's like people get so annoyed when they get banned from stuff. But it's like it's I think we're hitting this point, and I don't, I hate being doom and gloom person, but I'm like, I do feel like we're hitting this point where places like Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, like they're going to have to be more serious about their terms and conditions for being on their platforms.
They're going to have to.
They're going to have to be more serious.
It's going to need to be like, we need your actual details. You can't be anonymous.
You can't be anonymous. Yeah. Like,
I've seen some horrific stuff of people like user 123456789.
Yeah.
Something racist.
Yeah. And they just say something like wild and they're on, and some people just go on there just to troll and things like that. But it's like, again, I feel like these numbers are so like out of control that people are like, oh, well, I only have 10K followers. Like, it doesn't matter what I do on the internet. It's like, no, but that's like a lot of people who see your stuff. And if you sit there and you share something that's false information, for me, I'm like, that doesn't get covered under your freedom of speech, because freedom of speech does not allow you to yell fire in a crowded theater. Like that means you can't spread false information. You can't yell, like you can't yell plandemic. You can't yell it when there's no proof behind it.
You see, this is why I think Americans are drunk on freedom. Like drunk. Like
it's kind of true, right?
Because because
so much freedom.
Too much freedom. Just the reality of saying, you know what? I don't agree with what the president said. I can say that. Like here in Zimbabwe, like saying that, like literally, I know I have a friend of mine, and she's not an acquaintance, went to school, and I actually was in the same class with her brother, and she's a lawyer, and I think she's gotten arrested maybe 4 times this year.
For just disagreeing.
Or sometimes having a placard and just walking around with like, and disagreeing with the government, and that's just something that, like, you're like, you cannot even say, like, hey, look, you are destroying us, when there are people who are sleeping on the streets, there are people, like, lives getting destroyed, right? The country is in shambles. You can't even speak against the government.
This is in Zimbabwe.
In Zimbabwe. You can't even do that. But then here, I feel like there's this excess, this massive excess of freedom to the point that people just feel like they do not, they feel like they don't have. So it's like you go on Facebook, right? You already have your views. You're like, I'm this Christian person. I'm anti-abortion. I'm anti-gay rights. I'm, you know, and I like Trump because he promises me that he'll give me all these things. And so you're already conditioned to think a certain way. And so information is flowing. And then Jenny from Wisconsin posts something that's ridiculous, right? And then you see that post. And then you're like, interesting. Because it agrees agrees with your point of view. And because it agrees with your point of view, you don't do any research. You don't go like, hey, let me like look up like actual like sources. Actual like, you know.
And
you
to know, be like, honest, it's hard.
Accountable sources. And but people, a lot of people don't even do that, to be honest.
Well, like, no, but I'm saying it's so, now it's so easy to make false information look legit. Like, it is so easy for people to make false information look legit. Even, we listened to a podcast about the Plandemic documentary.
Right.
And they were saying, if you had done just one Google search on any of those scenes, you would have seen, like, A, it was stock footage. Mm-hmm. Like, B, like, the doctor who was in it had been, like, discredited, like, 1,000 times. Mm-hmm. Like, there was like all this information, mm-hmm. but it's like they were like, the documentary looks so legit.
Right.
Like, it looks so legit.
Right.
Because you can do so much with computers now. Right. That it's exactly. like, it really, exactly. really is hard to exactly. differentiate, which is why I'm saying that. Mm. I think a lot of these platforms, YouTube is another great example. Mm-hmm. I've had a hate for YouTube for a long time now because
yeah.
they really push sensationalized information above real true facts. And mm-hmm. that's like, that is a human trait that mm-hmm. we have put into our technology. Mm-hmm. We have put sensationalism mm-hmm. into our technology and yeah. programmed them that yeah. way so that instead, because we want people to continue mm-hmm. to engage with our platforms that mm-hmm. we're creating so right. that you can get more advertisements, you right. can get more money. Like right. it all comes down to capitalism right. and it drives me insane.
Yeah. And because they make so much money off it, you know,
yeah.
like the ads are pouring in. Like some of those videos when you hear, like, I mean, when you go on Twitter, you don't take them seriously. When you're going on TikTok, you don't take a lot of these guys seriously, but they get so many views on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
They get so many views on YouTube. You know, mm-hmm. a lot of this sensational stuff, pandemic, something called the fall of cabal. Like, you know, there was a time when people were just sharing all these, like, you know, celebrities are drinking people's blood and all mm-hmm. sorts of nonsense
mm-hmm.
that just makes it's just nonsense. And basically, they make so much money off it that they're not willing to take that stuff down because they want to keep making more money. Plus, also, you have society that is just so high on... I was going to say high on their own supply. No,
that's it's so weird.
It rhymes. But the, like, the idea... And I was talking to someone yesterday, and we were talking about drugs, right? The drug industry. And how the drug industry... we've come to a point where a patient can come into a doctor's office, right,
mm-hmm.
and ask for a certain type of drug. I've literally seen an ad go like, ask your doctor about this
they
drug.
They all do that. They all say that.
I was like, where? Like, where on earth does a patient just stroll in, right?
And be like, I know more about anxiety medication than you do, a doctor right. who has gone to school, who talks to other doctors, who goes to conferences,
right.
who does all this stuff to right. further their education
right.
on medicine.
Right.
But me, Joe Nobody,
right.
who literally works like, yeah, I'm a John Nobody. Yeah. And like, I don't know anything.
Right.
I don't know anything about medicine. Like, right. how am I going to know that this drug is right. going to help me with anxiety more than the right. what you're prescribing to me? Like, right. that's ridiculous.
Then we get shocked when stuff like, you know, opioid crisis comes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, guys, a lot of it is because these drug companies have been given so much power over society that they can just blow past a lot of, like, these FDA things. Like, they can blow past those things and just create a drug, put it out without being truthful about how addictive it is or mm-hmm. any of those things. And that's just something that society, we've become so drunk with this freedom or this idea of we want to be free, that to the point that we don't even understand. The probably countries that are under the most oppressive governments understand freedom better than a lot of people in the States, because they understand the basic needs of freedom, like the basic need of freedom. And I think the version that we have nowadays is almost like an individualism
mm.
that it's not even freedom to be yourself, but it's freedom from responsibility in community. Like, it's freedom mm. from saying, that's why people will say, I won't wear no dang mask, I'm just gonna do my own thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even though your neighbors are dying, even though people around you, there's a pastor who didn't want to wear masks again, and a pastor passed away some months ago, another pastor is in hospital again, like, and because they've just told themselves, I have freedom to do whatever, that they have pass the disease around to other people. Mm-hmm. They have done all these things. And so, or they're willing to pass on information that they don't prove or they don't research. They mm-hmm. don't, they haven't said, hey, let me pause. Let me like research this for the next hour. Let me not just watch this, because they see a video and it's like this deep voice, like Joe Biden has been this. And there's this like ominous music playing in the background. And they're like, it's true. I knew it. Mm-hmm. They're drinking children's blood, you know? And
you're really stuck on that one video. I'm really, like, that was really wild.
Yeah, it's wild. And I think, and it's like, Have you ever wondered how you are jumping from conspiracy theory to another? Have you ever thought to yourself, maybe like you yourself, you're so drunk on your freedom, you're so drunk on just maintaining your position politically or whatever, to the point that you're willing to hop from one conspiracy to another, and you get a, and they get a high from it, they feel good from it because they get to post it on Facebook and be like, the children, when actual kids who are getting kidnapped, kids who are getting trafficked are suffering and they need help. And I'm like, guys, there are actual needs out there that need, like, needs out there in the world that you need to pay attention to, but you're spending time on conspiracy theories, you know. And I think that's something that it frustrates me, but it needs to be censored. Stuff like that needs to be hardcore censored. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, my thing is like, the moment every time I say it, I'm like hardcore censored.
Yeah, I feel like I'm taking. Say, where is that like fear? Like, right. Don't you get that gut reaction of like fear though?
I get scared, like, because I'm like,
right?
It's like taking a toy from a violent child, you know, like or like a violent, like, yeah, like it's like saying, hey, I'm gonna take your toy now because you're chewing it, and I don't want you to swallow. You know, you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to swallow any sharp edges and die. And this kid is like ready to punch you in the face, you know? And that's how I feel right now. Like, I'm kind of like, I'm like, they're like holding on so much to this thing that's killing them, that's causing them to act crazy. And just, and a lot of them, I get it. Life is painful and life is hard, but that's just not the path to take. Mm-hmm. And that is why, you know, you see like Sadler, he takes on this. He says, let's remind them that they need us.
Yeah.
And then they start saying, new disease, fires, this, and this, yeah, and this, and this, and this. And people...
To scare people.
Except like people aren't really believing it this time. People are kind of are free now. But before, you know, it looks like he had this core group of people that he was like on a pulpit, and they were like around him. Their fists were raised high, and they were like going nuts. I feel like that's where we are right now. It's like it's gonna be, to be honest with you, like we are coming to a point where it's gonna be like, hey, we need to censor, we need to do it. But also on the reverse, government needs to not censor people when they criticize them.
Yes.
They need to not weaponize their followers or weaponize their position in order to protect themselves from being criticized.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's something that we're seeing in, which is why I love this movie so much, because it shows us, you know, both sides, both edges of the sword.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think before we close out, I want to talk about Evie's transformation.
Mm-hmm.
I still don't know if I agree with V's like method.
I don't agree with it.
I think it's pretty extreme. But I also really want to talk about just like the benefit of it and him like really freeing her from kind of who she was and who she felt like she had to be. I think one thing I wanted to talk about is, I remember when this movie came out, I was in high school.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm a high school girl, so I'm like, I cannot believe that Natalie Portman actually shaved her head for this role.
Yeah.
Like, what a crazy woman. Like, why would you do that? And if you've seen me in real life, I have super long hair. I've always had long hair. I've only chopped it short once.
Yeah.
Like, that's just something, like, I'm known for, like, my long hair. And it's interesting because, like, I feel like as I've gotten older – you start hitting these perspectives where you're like, you're like, if I chop my hair off, I chop my hair off, it grows back. Like, hair is like, it for me, when I watch her transformation scene now, like, I see that, like, almost superficial transformation. Like, you get to hit, like, the deep stuff.
Yeah.
Like, the things that you used to care about, the superficial stuff, like, and being able to care about the core. And I really love the whole story about the lesbian woman who gets put in the camp and, like,
Valerie.
Yeah, like, I Love that. And I love that V, like, keeps the roses alive and, like,
I have a conspiracy theory, though.
What's your conspiracy
theory? Okay, not conspiracy. See, now I'm stuck on here conspiracy we go. Theory. I have a theory. I think V is Valerie.
I don't think he is.
I think it is.
He's a man.
But he can change his voice. He's, like, throughout the torture scenes, he's been changing his voice. I think.
Yeah, but he said he never knew her. And they even say that he was.
But he could say that, like, he'd be like, I never knew myself. I never knew.
Okay. <You know? laughs> Okay. I'm going to let you just have that. I'm not entertaining it. I'm not even going there.
I think it is, but.
Anyway, I'll don't take this from me because I love that. And I don't want her to be V. So don't take this from me. Anyway, I really love that. And I love the transformation of just like being able to hear someone's story who's different than you and having that transform you and have it transform your priorities and have it like be part of your life and who you become. Because you know what? Evie was in a different life path and she was dull to everything, even though she knew that things were happening. And, like, her parents were both murdered and, like, taken from her. But she was, like, trying to live a different life and not be an activist at all. And this, like, really transformed her. And I think that's something within society. Like, I think it's, like, ugh, I used to always be like this. Like, if I change my ways now, people will think I'm a hypocrite. And it's, like, I just think that there's never really a good excuse to like keep yourself from self-growth and like growing and like being a new person. We actually today we're just learning about Walt Disney. So apparently Walt Disney used to be very anti-Semitic, which again I think is a product of his time and like what he grew up seeing and everything.
Yeah.
And after World War II, like he realized like how horrific the like the Holocaust was and all of that, and he did a lot to repent for the fact that he was so anti-Semitic when he was younger. And it's like, I think in that circumstance, like you're not being hypocritical, you're being transformed. I think you have to look at it as a transformation. And I think we see that with Evie, like she was complacent before, but now she's transformed. And that helped her to be able to push the button and blow up that building and help change all of England for the better.
Yeah, that's so good. Yeah, I think transformation is definitely, I think on my journey, you know, moving from Zimbabwe to the States and understanding what systemic racism is. And now I feel like I have taken stages. I'm always afraid. I see people who put on their profile, like singer, activists, and I've done that before, but I've usually taken it down pretty quickly afterwards, and because I'm like, I can't self-proclaim myself to be an activist. I can't do that. Like, or like even the idea of saying activist, no, I don't want to. This like, and I think that there's a fear that comes with choosing to become this person who says, "Hey, I'm gonna stand up for what is right," And yeah, I love that V says you're free, you know, not afraid anymore.
Not because afraid.
She's willing to die.
Yeah.
And her, just by virtue of her being willing to face death, that was pretty powerful. In the book, they have a similar showdown type of thing. And kind of showing the power of convincing someone otherwise, or the power of sticking to your conviction.
Because
I think like the powerful feel extra powerful when they change someone's thinking, right? And or turn someone, you know, you feel you're most powerful when you believe something so much that you're willing to die for it. You know, there's a transformation that happens in you when you reach that point. And I think they displayed that very powerfully in the book and in the movie.
Yeah.
In the book too. The book, I won't do spoilers anymore.
He's doing it. And when Tom's talking about the book, he's talking about the book 1984, not
1984,
not the comic book V for Vendetta.
So V for Vendetta is
a comic.
It's inspired by 1984.
Yes. The book. Yes.
Awesome. Cool. So we are going to round this up.
Yes, we are. I have something embarrassing to admit. I forget if we actually decided that we're going to do Lord of the Rings next week, Fellowship of the Ring, or if we're going to do Batman. I think we decided on Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, Lord of the Rings.
Okay, whew. I was like, wait a second.
We're doing Fellowship of the Ring.
Yes.
Photo. Did I say Fellowship of the Rings?
Yeah, you did. The rings. Now there's multiple rings. Well, technically there are multiple rings.
There are multiple rings.
But this is the specific ring.
Right.
So.
And I'm super excited to go through this. My one of my favorite movies of all time.
He talks about it a lot.
All the time. That's my world. That's my universe.
Hobbit.
For life.
He is Hobbit. He is one.
Yeah, and I'm becoming a Hobbit adult end of this year. And it's gonna be a feast. Just you and me.
It's just the two of us.
That's the feast.
Because of the pandemic.
Yes. And because I'm an introvert.
And because he's an introvert. But maybe. Yeah, no, actually mostly because he's an introvert.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us on this nerdy journey.
We'll see you next week.